On 24th September 1599, while William Shakespeare was pondering a draft of Hamlet in his house downriver from the Globe in Southwark, a mile to the north, barely 20 minutes' walk across the Thames, a motley group of Londoners was gathering in a rambling, half-timbered building lit by many mullioned Tudor windows. Even at the time, the meeting was recognised as historic, and notaries were present with ink and quill to keep a record of the unusually diverse cross-section of Elizabethan London that came that day to the Founders' Hall off Moorgate Fields. At the top of the social scale, hung with his golden chain of office, there was the stout figure of the Lord Mayor himself, Sir Stephen Soame. Robed in scarlet fustian, he was accompanied by two of his predecessors in office and several senior aldermen of the city, buttery Elizabethan burghers, their white bearded faces nestling in a feathery tangle of cambric ruffs. The most powerful of these was the gravely goateed, ermine-trimmed and stovepipe-hatted figure of Sir Thomas Smith, auditor of the City of London, who had made a fortune importing currants from the Greek islands and spices from Aleppo. A few years earlier, Auditor Smith had helped form the Levant Company as a vehicle for his trading voyages. This meeting was his initiative. Besides these portly pillars of the City of London were many less exalted merchants, hopeful of increasing their fortunes, as well as a scattering of ambitious and upwardly mobile men of more humble estate, whose professions the notaries dutifully noted down: grocers, drapers and haberdashers, a cloth worker, a vintner, a leather seller and a skinner. There were a few scarred soldiers, mariners and bearded adventurers from the docks at Woolwich and Deptford, surf-battered sea dogs, some of whom had fought against the Spanish Armada a decade earlier, all doublets and gold earrings, with their sea dirks tucked discreetly into their belts. Several of these deckhands and mizzen masters had seen action with Drake and Raleigh against the Spanish treasure ships in the warmer waters of the Caribbean, and now described themselves to the notaries in the polite Elizabethan euphemism as privateers. There was also a clutch of explorers and travellers who had ventured further afield, the Arctic explorer William Baffin, for example, after whom the Polar Bay was named. Finally, also taking careful notes, was the self-described historiographer of the voyages of the East Indies, the young Richard Hakluyt, who had been paid £11.10 by the adventurers for compiling all that was then known in England about the spice routes. Such a varied group would rarely be seen under one roof, but all had gathered with one purpose: to petition the ageing Queen Elizabeth I, then a bewigged and painted woman of 66, to start up a company to venture in the pretended voyage to ye East Indies and other islands and countries thereabouts, there to make trade by buying or bartering of such goods, wares, jewels or merchandise as those islands or countries may yield or afford, the which it may please the Lord to prosper. Smith had gathered 101 of the richer merchants 2 days earlier and pressed them to commit to individual subscriptions ranging from £100 to £3,000, considerable sums in those days. In all, Smith had raised £30,133, 6 shillings and 8 pence. This the investors did by drawing up a contract and adding their contribution in the subscription book, written with their own hands, so they declared, for the honour of our native country and for the advancement of trade and merchandise within this realm of England.